We'll proceed to the fifth case, the United States v. Bell. Mr. Bauer.
Good morning, Your Honors. Attorney Stephen Bauer on behalf of the appellant, the defendant at the trial level in this matter. Fundamentally, we have got a dispute concerning sentencing, which is certainly not surprising to the Seventh Circuit, or any circuit, really. Your Honors, Mr. Belk was a young man that started working for an insurance agency in Maryville and overreached his authority, ending up taking money from his employer. What we have is an indictment that came down in late 2002 that specifically charged Joshua Belk with 8 counts of mail fraud, all having to do with checks being drawn on his employer, signed by Belk, his employer's check, made payable to MBNA America, and applied on Mr. Belk's personal credit card account at MBNA. So fundamentally, we've got 8 counts of the indictment in which he was convicted, in which all of these checks were presented, and in fact, at the trial of this matter, Beck on the trial literally did admit that these transactions and misappropriation of Mr. Rogge's funds took place. Here is the initial issue. There is a restitution order entered in this matter for over $600,000. The legal argument that we have advanced on appeal is that Belk was convicted of 8 counts of mail fraud, and these only dealt with the use of Mr. Rogge's insurance agency checks for payment of his MBNA credit card account. We submit that, as both the government and the defendant has argued, the United States versus Brothers case in the Seventh Circuit that was decided in 1992 gives us an idea of what we're talking about. In other words, we contend that the restitution order needs to be limited to the direct result of the loss of the crime for which the defendant has been convicted. The reason why Brothers is extremely important is because of this reason. Belk was in fact convicted of 8 separate counts, 8 separate checks. If there had been, in truth and fact, 3, 4, 5, or 20 more checks drawn from the Rogge agency to the MBNA, then it is my view as attorney for Mr. Belk that he would in fact be responsible for a restitution order, because that's part and parcel of what he was convicted of. The Brothers case dealt with an individual who, over a series of years, almost 15 years, purloined disability checks from the government. In fact, Brothers was only convicted of a few of those, but the restitution order dealt with all of them. We think in this situation, that's what the restitution order needs to be limited to.
How much is that?
That's $60,800, Your Honor.
But that's, what about the other checks? I think there were, about 15 of them or something?
There are, the record is not clear as to how many more checks there were. What the trial court did, and that's the reason why we've suggested a remand, what the trial court did was simply accept information from Mr. Rogge and his accountant as to what the total loss was, without regard as to whether it was directly related to the MBNA scheme for the use of Rogge's insurance checks to pay his personal credit card bill. that's where we see the real problem is. It's our view that the Mandatory Restitution Act must be tied into what he's in fact convicted of. What he's convicted of is taking checks to pay his credit card amount. So it's our view that it should either the restitution should be limited to the $60,800 or remand for the trial court to make a finding as to what additional checks, if any, were in fact used by Belk to pay his own personal MBNA credit card account.
Would on remand under that circumstance, would they be would that still be labeled part of the offensive conviction, I guess, or whatever word we're using for?
I think it would be. It's my view that we've got a separate animal as far as for what the restitution should be, as opposed to what relevant conduct would be. So that's our strongest position.
How far beyond that could it go if it went on back on remand for the court to look at? Could it get to the things where they used cash and other schemes beyond this particular, whatever he's doing with these checks?
Your Honor, it's my thinking in this that the restitution order needs to be limited to the offense for which he was convicted. The scheme for which he was convicted limited the eight counts charge limited itself to the MBNA.
How did that limit the scheme? The indictment appears to charge a scheme that is broader than just these eight checks. Indeed, it seems to include in the scheme all of the events that underlay the restitution order.
Absolutely. Now we run into
Now we have the rule, as I understand it, that for mail fraud, the crime is the scheme rather than each individual act of fraud. The individual acts of fraud may be actionable separately, but the crime remains the scheme. Now, why doesn't that support the restitution order?
Because the way that it's charged. If they had, in fact, charged him with all these separate violations...
No, but if the crime is the scheme, there's no need to have 63 zillion counts, nor indeed would your client be better off if he'd been convicted of 63 zillion counts. Just one is enough. You just have to be convicted of the scheme.
Then fundamentally, I argue Blakely in the idea that if that's going to happen, that amount needs to be submitted to the jury for determination. And that
why?
Was
we've held that restitution is a civil remedy, doesn't have to go on the criminal procedure.
Yes, you have clearly
got quite a series
in George.
Of cases that we would have to overrule in order to go in your favor.
Judge, I think that what we need to limit it to is when they charge it the way that they did. If you open the whole thing up, then you are correct. So it's our view that it needs to be, because of the way that it's charged, it needs to be limited to the restitution for the conduct for which he was convicted. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bauer. Mr. Holar?
Thank you. May it please the court. David Holler for the United States. Your Honors, the district court's restitution order in this case properly compensated the George C. Rogge, the agency, the victim in this case, for all losses that were sustained as part of the defendant's fraudulent scheme.
You say it compensated them. It ordered Belk to compensate them. What do you think the probability is that he'll pay any of the restitution order?
Your Honor, I don't think he will pay the entire restitution order, but he is only 30 years old and he has many years of earning left, so I think there's a possibility that the government can obtain some repayment for the Rogge agency.
It's already got some of it, hasn't it?
I'm sorry?
Hasn't it already got some?
There was some that was deducted from the amount because he had already repaid certain monies to the agency before he was charged in his own attempt to forestall either civil or criminal action against him.
Was that $650,000 or whatever it is taken into consideration what he paid back?
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
That's already been subtracted. Huh?
Yes, it does. In this case, Your Honors, the indictment, I think that looking at Brothers and looking also at the Torino decision, which is also cited in our brief, it is appropriate to look at the indictment as an indication of the scope of the scheme. And the scheme here, it's not as if the defendant was engaged in two separate schemes where, you know, he had this check scheme, and then later on he came up with a separate scheme. There was an overall scheme by this particular defendant to abuse a position of trust within the agency and his role as an accountant to steal money by whatever method he could. And it was easier, I guess, for him to steal smaller amounts of money five or six different ways than to steal all of the money exactly the same way. But it was still part of the overall scheme to conceal from the rogue agency that he was stealing them blind. And on some instances, he would write a check, in most cases, to MBNA America, although there were also evidence of, I believe, at least two other checks that he wrote to Valparaiso University and to one other entity that he also did through this same postage check scheme. He stole cash through a number of different schemes, and he stole them in through different accounting methods, the transfer fund, shorting of commission checks. By the end, the defendant was stealing so much money, and I think he'd been getting away with it for so long, he essentially didn't even hide it. The books just didn't balance in certain accounts, and that's still all money that was being stolen. It was all part of the same scheme with the same objective to embezzle money from the rogue agency. And under those circumstances, under the Mandatory Victim Restitution Act, it's all part of the same scheme, and it's I understand, Your Honor, that
is there any reason, by the way, why it's called the Mandatory Victim Act? As if being a victim was mandatory rather than being called the Mandatory Restitution Act?
I don't know. Maybe there was another MRA already on the statute.
Perhaps members in Congress just can't write in English.
I'm sure they wanted the word victim in there based on my understanding of other victim acts and things that we deal with, but that would be my guess on the matter.
Just mandatory restitution for victims.
I have to deal with the statute as written, Your Honor. I know you do, too.
So do we.
But the reality is that this is a single unitary scheme, and it's not even as if I could sort of see a situation, I suppose, in the trial if things had developed differently that might have come out differently. But the reality is the defendant got on the stand and said, I took all of this money. I took every last dime of it through checks, through cash. His defense was, in my opinion, at least a ludicrous one, but his defense was consent. His defense was my employer wanted to pay me more than $30,000 but didn't want anyone to know that, and so he was paying me $120,000 over the course of the year, but he was letting me just take cash whenever I needed it and pay off my credit card whenever I needed it. And that as well, I think, even if one looked at it...
So his defense was that he was violating the tax laws and not the mail fraud statute.
Yes, in the transcript he said that he was violating... No, actually, Your Honor, he indicated that he was reporting the taxes supposedly through his consulting business because he was running most of the cash through a business corporation. But he and his employer also, according to his testimony, if you read it, were doing this to violate the Social Security laws and I guess it's the FICA laws to save something like $1,400 in taxes for his company. The point is that it was a ludicrous defense, but the point for these purposes is that it's all part of the same unitary scheme. It's not as if it's not as if there was a separate scheme. He was stealing checks from the rogue agency, and he was stealing cash from his accounting business. He's stealing them all from the same victim over the same period of time. The cash actually starts in 97. The checks start in 99 and continue on, but the scheme is alleged over the entire time period. And the fraud scheme was alleged with specificity, as is required by the Act and by the case law. It defined the time over which the acts occurred. And since we know that the jury rejected the testimony, that this consent defense as to the mailing specifically, it's ludicrous based on the testimony. All of the testimony regarding the cash came out at trial through the testimony of the first witness, Andy Mannix, through Timothy Rising and the other witnesses, that all of this money was being stolen at the same time. And since it's all part of a single unitary scheme, the victim should be compensated for it. Otherwise, we're really creating a situation where if I don't charge the right mailings, the scheme gets split up. Some of it has to be, I guess, charged criminally in state court and some of it here, and that's just not what the Act requires. So we believe that the restitution order was proper and should be upheld. The sentencing issues were not discussed. Essentially, we would stand on the brief. The judge was aware of his discretion. The loss was between $400,000 and $1 million when it was all totaled up, and it was proper for the court to find that, regardless of the specific amounts in the eight checks that were charged. We could have charged one check, 15 checks. We could have charged additional mailings or attempted to find phone calls or things like that. But under the scheme that was charged in the indictment, the restitution order and the sentence were both proper, and we would ask, therefore, that the district court's judgment be affirmed.
You charge him with all those checks, you never get a restitution, right? Because his work.
I'm sorry?
If you charge him with all those checks, you wouldn't have had too much of a work history opportunity, would he, to restitution?
That's probably true, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, I would give back the balance of my time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Holley. Mr. Bauer.
You know, in a real way, I agree with what Mr. Howler has said. Here's my suggestion, the reason why that they have goofed up in this situation. If they wanted to roll in and get a restitution order for $654,000, you charge one count with taking the cash, one count with paying Valpo, one count on MBNA, you charge them all. That way you've got a jury determination. They did not opt to do that. Are we in the position that the government can charge one count of mail fraud, let's say stealing $20 from Rogi, one count of mail fraud, and then roll in $650,000 of other events, alleged events, do it at the sentencing time with the standards proponents of the evidence, get a restitution order for $654,000?
You want a conviction on all the checks?
I don't think you need to, Judge.
No, but if you did, wouldn't you have a Herculean sentence?
Well,
if there was a conviction, of course.
Except for being together and grouped together. So that's where we are. He should get the benefit of the improper charging because there has not been the jury determination on all these other items.
A lot of what was taken was the cash, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Is that a federal charge?
I don't think so.
Well, isn't that part of the problem with trying these all? I mean, this is part of a whole scheme, isn't it?
That's part of the problem with a restitution order. It may be admissible under relevant conduct for the guideline determination. Thank you.
All right. Thanks to both counsel. Mr. Bauer, you have an additional thanks to the court for accepting the appointment in this case.
The case is taken under advisement.